Today is May 2nd, 2014. My name is Lewis O'Neill, and I'll be interviewing Karen Byers.
It's 15.
What? Oh, 2015. It's 2015. And Karen was born in 1945. Let's get into it. So, Karen, where were you born?
I was born in Waterville, Michigan. And that's Waterville. It was near Lake Michigan, on the west side of Michigan, near Chicago.
And is that a small town?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I grew up on a farm. The people in that area grew fruit trees, apples, cherries, and so it was a fruit growing area. And also a resort area for people who came over from Chicago.
And did you have any siblings working on the farm with you? What was the family like when you were there?
Yeah, I'm the second of four children. I have a brother that's 6 years younger and a sister who's 10 years younger. And both my parents and my older sister have passed.
When did they... So did you guys all work on the farm, or did someone go to the city?
Yeah, in fact, something interesting that I probably should write about or tell about is we had migrant workers that came up to pick our fruit at that time. And my dad, they were small farmers compared to today. There's only a couple major farmers in the area now that produce everything, but... In the spring, people would come up with their cars piled full, and we had housing, little houses in the back where they stayed. And some stayed through one season, and some stayed from strawberries through the harvest of apples. But it was it's very historical that time, basically, because mm-hmm. they don't do that anymore. You hear migrants in the Hispanic, but this was mostly white people from the South in Oklahoma.
Oh yeah, so the
do I say too much?
Oh no, it's all right.
My dad died when I was 15.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you live with your mom and...
Yeah. Then my sister was married, and I lived with my mom and my younger brother and sister. Mm-hmm. The year that my dad died, I worked on the farm since I was about 12 years old.
Okay.
We all did.
Hmm? What kind of stuff do you do on the farm?
We packed our own fruit. Mm-hmm. We had a packing shed with apple graters, and then also they took trailers out, a big trailer that was made so that the pickers brought up the strawberries, and then my mom and my aunts would sort through them and put them in crates. Mm-hmm. And then they'd take them to the local market. Benton Harbor Market, Benton Harbor, Michigan, was the largest open fruit market in the United States, I think, at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And what that means is they just drove on to the market, and then buyers from Chicago for the grocery stores would come in and bid on the fruit. And after my dad died, I actually did it myself. And I was driving trucks down. Benton Harbor was about 12 miles away. Mm-hmm. And the summer my dad died, I drove. We had a huge peach crop. And I drove boxes of peaches back and forth from Benton Harbor. And at that time was the beginning of what they called... I can't remember, it's not cold storage, but it was the first time that they would take these boxes, put them through sort of a cold ice thing, and then load them onto the truck. Because at that time, the reason buyers were on there was because it was nothing like today where there were refrigerated trucks or anything. It was all local produce. Yeah. And so that's kind of what I remember mostly.
Yeah. What was the city life in Benton Harbor?
Well,
was there much to do there?
No. No. No, it was mostly farming around there. Okay, and mostly the farmers were considered the wealthy people or the people who had the nice houses and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was Bainbridge, Michigan, Bainbridge Township.
Okay.
My grandpa came there. I forgot to tell you that my grandpa settled on that land. It was called Byers Brothers. I have my maiden name back. Took my maiden name of Byers. And it was called Byers and Son. We used to stamp the bushels. That was one job that the little kids had. We could stamp the boxes that went out. And one said Byers Brothers. One said Byers and Son, and then it became Byers Brothers. Everyone in that community, I didn't learn this until middle age, that everyone there were what we call, what's known as Volga Germans.
Mm-hmm.
And these were people that lived along the Volga River in Russia. They migrated here during the late 1800s. And I didn't know that all my neighbors were the same thing. I did know we were all Germans. But the significance of the Volga Germans is that even though they lived in Russia, they retained their language, their schools, their religion. And they lived there about 100 years since Catherine the Great invited them to come in there. And there's also Volga Germans that raised the wheat in Kansas. They call them red wheat people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and really, I didn't even think about the fact. I really didn't think that where I grew up was unique until I left.
So did any of these Volga Germans bring over traditions and stuff that you celebrate sometimes in the city, or do you ever
in
notice
the town,
anything like that?
We had a blossom parade because of the fruit.
Mm.
My parents and my uncle, they used to speak some German.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Germany as an exchange student when I was 16. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I think you told me it was.
Yeah. No, there wasn't any real traditions. It was just part of life. It was, you know, the kids in the school. This is called the Southwestern Michigan. And it runs from the border of Indiana,
mm-hmm.
right north of South Bend, over to this side of Kalamazoo, and up towards South Haven, Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go to the lake all the time.
Was that fun?
Yeah. I swam in Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Had to be at least 64 degrees. And my best childhood memories was going to camp at Camp Warren on Lake Michigan.
Was that fun? Like, did you make a lot of friends there? Anything you still know from there?
Maybe? No, I don't.
Mm-hmm. No, but, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So did you, like, what kind of food did you like to eat? Was there any, like, German food that your parents would keep around? Sauerkraut or anything, you know?
Yeah, I think we did, but a lot of mashed potatoes, pork, that kind of thing.
Just kind of country food, what you'd expect from maybe something like that.
Yeah.
So what about school? Did you go to school in the city, or was there one of those barn, you know, kind of type?
I did go to a two-room grade school.
Oh, yeah.
And then they had some trouble with taxpayers, and since the farmers had the most tax base, Oh, we live near Pawpaw Lake, which is between Waterville and Coloma, and there was a Waterville High School and a Coloma High School, and there was a problem, and Coloma wanted the Bainbridge kids, which we were, and Waterville, we were also in the Waterville district, and half of the neighbors were wanted to go to Coloma, and half wanted to go to Waterville. And then Eau Claire, Michigan, which is 14 miles south of where we lived, decided to come in and take us. So my freshman year in high school, I was bused way before there were any kind of busing rules. And it took a half hour to go to school and back. And then that only lasted until they figured that all out. And in my sophomore year, I graduated from high school.
Mm-hmm. And where'd you go to college after that?
I went to Michigan State in East Lansing.
What'd you major in?
Journalism and child development, and I ended up with a degree from the Home Ec, the College of Home Ec with communications, mm-hmm. with a communications degree.
Yeah. And so school was different back then, right? You know, it was a lot different than it is today.
Well, we didn't have computers, that's for sure.
No computers.
I know how to use the library with the cards and stuff, but I went to college, the year I was in college was 1963, and I started in September, and in November, President Kennedy was killed, assassinated in November. Do you know who President Kennedy is?
Yeah, I know who President Kennedy is. So what was that like around then?
The war had, Vietnam War had started. In fact, I'd had my high school friend, let's see, I met him in Eau Claire. I told you about Eau Claire. And I went to he was 2 years older than me. And then I went to Waterville. He was a big farmer. He still is. He's mm-hmm. modern day. He's probably got one of the biggest farms in Michigan, but he wanted me to marry him. I had been accepted in Michigan State, and he came over. We kind of dated. I dated around, and then in the senior year, we kind of got back together. And he came over, and he proposed to me, and I was like, oh, my God. And the reason was is because everyone had to get married by August 4th,
mm-hmm.
or they'd be drafted.
Yeah.
I met a man not too long ago who told me not only did that happen, but that during the draft, it was another year or so that you had to have children, and then even if you were married, if you had children, then you could duck the draft. So everybody was doing everything they could to avoid the draft.
Yeah.
But I refused. I said, I want to go to Michigan. I want to go at least one term. And so he couldn't deal with that because he didn't want to be drafted. So
yeah.
I'm glad you wouldn't be here if I'd have married him.
Yeah.
So anyway, I went to Michigan State on a work study thing. Mm-hmm. And I liked college.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to realize there were other people in the world besides the people I knew in Bainbridge.
Yeah. So you said you graduated in the 60s, right? 64?
I graduated, okay, when I...
Let me see.
I usually tell my experience like this, that when my freshman year... Kennedy was killed. We all went home. I remember, you know, everything. I was watched John salute his dad, and it was really a terrible time.
Mm-hmm.
It was I don't know how to explain it, because even if you don't like our president, if our country doesn't have a president, it's really a scary feeling.
Yeah.
And Kennedy was loved, especially by the Germans. But anyway, we all went we all went home, and that was a significant experience in the fact that we, my friends on, it, well, what I'm trying to say is, that with that day or that weekend before we went home, I was in a, the only clique I've ever been in, and it was the girls on in this dormitory, and we're all in the freshman girls, and we, this one girl was Catholic, and I wasn't raised Catholic, and she said, come on, let's go, we're going to go over to the church, and I was like, why, you know? And so we went over to the, I said, what do you mean we're going over to the church? It was a Friday. I think it happened on a Friday. Mm-hmm. And then it did happen on a Friday. And we went in this church, and it was just packed with kids. And I'm saying that influenced me because I'm now a Catholic. But I remember the impression that this we were walking out. I mean, that you couldn't, there was, you couldn't hardly get into the church. And there was this one guy, and he was this young man, and as we were trying to leave, he was in the pew kneeling and praying, and I'd never seen that. I grew up Congregationalist, and I went, wow, he's praying. He doesn't care what anybody thinks, you know. But we went home, and I don't remember much about coming back after that. I minded my own business, and most college kids did. There was a tower in the middle of campus where around 65, 66, my junior year, where people started gathering for the, and they had the SDS, Students for Democratic Society. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be sort of a socialist thing or whatever, but anyway, these people would gather, you know, and somebody would get up there and talk about how we should get out of Vietnam. There was big poster boards in the Union. I never forget those. And there was about 10 of them, and they depicted the black people in the South, and they depicted like whites only, blacks only. So all of that stuff was going on at the same time. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I always think that the impression is that hippies ran everything, and they really didn't. It was kind of a gradual thing, especially when the veterans came back, and also, we didn't know what we were fighting over there, and the guys kept getting killed, and everybody was drafted, and it was just, you know, go over there and fight, and it really affected, I mean, we didn't really care. We were interested in living our lives. We were young people, you know, we were getting our, looking for a mate and a career and all that, you know. But in the year that I went to school until I was, till 1969, 68, because I did a work study, so the first couple of years I could only take 12 credits and then work two, you know, and I had loans and scholarships. So I had a few more classes, and that's why I went on to, I didn't have enough to graduate in 67, which I would have, 63 to 67. So the deal is that by the time I left, Martin Luther King was shot, and I still remember standing in, I lived with other student teachers in a house off campus, even though we were still going to school, and I remember specifically standing in front of the TV listening to Robert Kennedy and saw him shot, saw the whole thing live right on TV. And I met with a friend of mine that went to college with me, Marion, and that's how I got here. I knew her. I came down here. Her sister went to Park College. Oh. I'm just talking.
What?
Is that okay? Anyway, her sister went to Park College in Parkville, Missouri. And I came down here with Marion after I graduated. She was down here working. Well, I ended up here how many years? 50? Almost 50
yeah,
years.
Must be 50.
No, 68. Whatever.
Oh, yeah, 45.
But anyway, Marion came to town in 2005, around 2005. And we'd lost track of each other, but her mother was from Oklahoma, and her mother died, and she went back there. They were from Michigan. And I guess they did some kind of special ceremony, and she was coming through, and she wanted to go to the plaza, and we met. And it was, we were together for about a day or two. And it was really something. It was just like nothing had passed. And then as it was just like we picked up from the last time we saw each other. And then I remember asking her, I said, you know, people ask me things like, were you a hippie? Were you this? You know, and I said, you know, I said, I think about that time, and I tell them that it seems like after the Kent State killing, after they were killed, those kids on Kent State, that we just sort of went underground, that everybody just kind of went their own way. Is that right? And she said, yeah. I said, we never said a word, did we? And she said, no. And actually, your political system since then has been a division of, I don't know.
But it's changed.
A lot of the people who went to the war or were involved in the war, you might call liberals, and a lot of those who didn't, I would consider conservative, because I don't know why we're back in Iraq, but I'm just going off course. But they killed four students in Kent State, and that was in the 70s, I think. And everything stopped. Everybody just, you know, all this thing about, well, you know, we need to change our government, or this is wrong, or whatever. That just stopped. Everybody went their own way. Mm-hmm. And I know my daughter said that she knew of her friend's mother and father, this in Kansas City, worked for Hallmark, mm-hmm. but then when they came home, at their house, they lived, you know, pretty 60s-like, mm-hmm. hippies-like. But that's kind of what we did. We kind of submerged all our beliefs and all our ways and whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some people became very religious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It really affected
me. But anyway, that's when I came here to Kansas City.
Yeah.
So.
You mentioned earlier you went to Germany during high school as an exchange student. So how was that? How long were you there for?
I was only there for about 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I was a junior in high school. My dad had died. But I don't know where I got the idea to do it, but all I know is that some of the kids in my high school were doing this, and they all had good grades or whatever. And then this one guy that I knew, and I knew he wasn't a top student, mm-hmm. he went. And I went, well, if he goes, I could go.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a bad student, but I wasn't a straight-A, nerdish kind of girl, you know. And so I looked into it, and I went over there in summer of 1962, I think. Yeah, before I was a senior in high school. I was through the, it was through in fact, it was quite new. I was one of the first ones. I found out later that I was sort of the groundbreaking students that it was called Youth for Understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And a lady out of Ann Arbor is the one who created it.
Oh, okay.
And one time when I here in Kansas City that had grown to be, you know, in the United States,
mm-hmm.
I went to interview because they had a job opening or something, and the lady I interviewed with was just astonished that I had met the founder of this organization. And I wasn't even that old then, I didn't think.
Uh-huh.
And I had a German family. I went to Saarland, and Mannheim, and I stayed in the school 16 years after World War II. I didn't realize, I was a kid, and I did not realize until they celebrated 25 years since the Vietnam War ended, I guess, then I went, oh my God, I was over in Germany only 16 years after the end of the war. I mean, I was seeing things that had just had been rebuilt. All the buildings were modern.
Yeah.
I went to the school for the first part of the summer. That was unique, too, because we were with a family, and we had like a German sister or brother. And she was in Mannheim going to school, and they had to make special permission for me to stay at this boarding school in Mannheim. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the summer, she was on vacation, and she'd sleep all day, and I'd get up because I was like, I'm going to be here very much longer. You know, I'd go out with the dad,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't speak German. I didn't speak German. I could only understand. I started to understand German when I was in a small town, but I couldn't understand it from Trudel. But he showed me bunkers and that they built. I mean, I watch PBS now, and I can see what he showed me that the Germans had. And close to the end of the summer, something happened. We were at lunch. They had a lot of bread, but their main meal was at lunchtime. Okay. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I guess I'd gotten to know him and the family enough, where I started asking Trudel. I could understand what they were kind of saying. Okay. So I asked Trudel to tell me if he would talk about being in war. He was older. He was in his 60s. He married late. He'd been in World War I and World War II. And we were talking about these things, and all of a sudden, I looked at Trudel, and I said, of course, I'd seen a lot of movies on the war.
Yeah.
We used to look at those. And I said, I want to ask him something. She said, go ahead, it's okay. So I asked in English, did you ever salute Hitler, like Hi Hitler? And they all started laughing. And I really thought it was a serious question, you know? I mean, it was a serious question. I didn't want to ask him. And he laughed, and I said, and the whole thing just changed. And I said, what's going on? And she said, well, he said, of course he did, or he wouldn't be sitting there talking to me. And then he went on and explained about what it was like during Hitler's time and about a house that we used to ride bicycles by, and that they weren't Germans, they weren't Jewish, they were just Germans. I said, oh, that house up on the hill? And he said, yes. That one night something happened, they were taken away, the next day they weren't there, nobody knew about them, and this was in a small town.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if you didn't salute him, you were pulled from the ranks, you know. And so that's when I learned, and I came home and told people that it just wasn't Jews that were killed. And I also, I never did anything because of that experience. The only thing I've done, and I didn't realize that until a few years ago, that my whole look on politics and life and what happens in America is based on what I learned there, because what happened in Germany, I learned firsthand that they liked Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
He put in roads, he was a really good leader, and then overnight he took control. And so I'm sort of avid supporter of any underdog thing, or power in politics, or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's, I even had a friend tell me that she's sort of my co-friend, and she goes down to demonstrate and all that kind of stuff still. She goes to Wichita, but one day I told her that, and she said, I didn't know that. And I said, yeah. I said, I was very young and impressionable.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I really didn't read what I heard.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't hear anybody in America tell me what this man told me that day, or
mm-hmm.
what I learned. I mean, And I haven't read too much about it either, but...
Yeah. I think even today we don't get the whole picture like that.
Yeah.
They still don't.
Right. And I think, too, I have a friend now who's from Kansas, and her family is a Volga German family, too, and I really, really like her. I've talked to you about her. She's as far right, Tea Party, and I'm as far left as she is. But when we like each other, as long as we stay away from and we're respectful of each other's political views, which is important.
Yeah.
That's why this divide in the parties is dangerous, because if we can't talk, I heard about that too. I heard about that from a young girl that I met who was in Mannheim, and she was killed because she went back to East Berlin, and she climbed the wall, tried to get back in or climb out or something, and she was shot. And she was my age, and I had spent time with her, and so I had learned that what the Germans did is they had like conversation, and then they had another conversation. And since being there, I don't know if you're following me, but I had a very good friend, Helga, that I worked with. She was a German bride, came over with a guy that was stationed in Germany during the Vietnam War. And I told her what I knew, and she said, oh, that's so true, is that people would, like you and I, I would know you are my grandson, so we could talk about the government, okay? Mm-hmm. Or Hitler, or whatever was going on.
Yeah.
But if this other man walked in the room and we knew him, worked with him, but we didn't know really who he was. They said they had a gift at changing the subject. They knew exactly how to make that conversation, not like, when someone's talking about something when you walk in a room or you think, are they talking about you? And you're like, no, but they're talking about something. They said, oh yeah, they had to, because they didn't know who was connected to the Nazis. And that's what's so dangerous about here, where like I can't talk to a person that has another political belief. I mean, that is just not safe for a country. So I can get off on this, but
we can move away from politics.
We gotta wind it up, I think.
Yeah, maybe. So we're about done.
Well, didn't take much to fill an hour, did it?
Well, we got a half hour in here. But so this was Karen Byers. My name is Lewis O'Neill, and we had a good interview.